Welcome to the Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee meeting. Today we will be hearing a number of bills that we expect to include in the Energy Omnibus Bill. And so we will be hearing them and then voting to include them in the Omnibus Bill, which has not been introduced yet. It will be introduced hasn't been heard in this committee until Tuesday. So at that time, we'll include them, along with others that are coming along the way. And we'll start with Senate File 526. Now, we do have quorum. Members will be in and out. It's near deadline week, and a lot of bills are being heard today, and a lot of evening meetings are being held, too. So I'm sorry. We're going to start with Senate File 916, Senator Dibble's bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 916 has to do with electric vehicles. And Madam Chair, I do have the A2 amendment. This is not the Committee of Origin, so I can explain the amendment.
And do we have that here, Senator Dibble?
Okay. And Madam Chair, that's not the other amendment that I was referring to that okay. Hopefully it'll come up quickly, and I think it's an amendment that Senator Anderson is going to offer.
This is not the Committee of Origin, did you say, or it is?
It is not.
Okay.
So I can explain the amendment before we pass it. Madam Chair and members, the bill has to do with electric cars and the fact that electric car technology has made great strides in recent years, and the opportunity for the marketplace to adopt electric car technology is imminent, and it is hoped that the state of Minnesota can position itself to be one of the leaders in adopting electric car technology and potentially attract some of the benefit from doing that in terms of business, job creation, other opportunities as well. But very quickly, I'll explain the amendment. The amendment would delete Section 1 as well as Section 11. And those have to do with waiving some rules around environmental review with respect to installation of electric vehicle infrastructure. On page 4, line 14, this was a concern brought to us by the Public Utilities Commission, and that just simply makes clear that when a retail seller of electricity is selling power for purposes of recharging the batteries that power electric cars, the language in the bill as it is make sure that is not a public utility. However, the thought occurred that if a public utility does decide to serve in that capacity, they would, of course, retain all the regulations that they need to abide by as a public utility. They wouldn't be able to skirt their normal business practice and standards. And then the remainder, Madam Chair, of the amendment, rather than being very specific about the remainder of the amendment occurs in Section 9, but it's back on pages 6 and 7. We get into all this business of 40 amps, 20-volt circuits, et cetera, for new construction. It's sufficient just simply to refer to the National Energy Code that's referenced in state statute, as well as rather than requiring all parking spaces in multifamily buildings and in parking lots have these, have the wiring built out to them, we waive that down to 10%. That's my amendment, Madam Chair.
Any questions on or discussion on Senator Dibble's A2 amendment? And all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Dibble, do you want to walk through the bill then?
Sure, Madam Chair. So the bill as it remains allows for these non-emission vehicles, these electric cars, if the Commissioner of Transportation authorizes it and it leaves all of the authority and the ability to regulate whether or not this can occur and in what ways, access to the HOV and HOT lanes as a single occupant without paying the toll. Madam Chair, unless the federal government sees fit to extend the waiver process that's available to states in order to do this, is set to expire by the end of September anyway. So this may well be a moot section unless the federal government or the Congress in its wisdom decides to extend that waiver process available to states. So this may or may not be a really great section. Section 5 just simply updates our electric vehicle definition. Section 6 also is a definition section. Section 7, again, are the provisions of these retail sellers of electricity and whether or not those are public utilities. Section 8 provides for new construction, making sure that we're also, when we're installing these systems, one of the powerful ideas around electric vehicle technology is, of course, is the fact that this may be a way to hold energy in a distributed fashion in batteries that would be available then back to the grid at peak times, et cetera. And so we make sure that those installations have bidirectional power capability. Section 9, again, provides for the building code. It doesn't go into effect until 2012. And so to make sure that as we're looking at updating the building code, we're looking at making sure that new construction is ready for the coming technology. And then Section 10 simply seeks that municipalities that have permitting authority, et cetera, to the extent practicable, really look favorably upon the process of applying for permits to issue the installation of electric vehicle infrastructure. And Madam Chair, I just wanted to spend a half a second talking about why I'm excited about this idea and why this is a great opportunity and why a few simple measures that we put in place now really might well position Minnesota for this coming technology. Electric vehicle technology and the batteries that power these vehicles and the performance of these vehicles have made great, great strides in recent years. So if you're driving an electric car in terms of its performance, you wouldn't be able to distinguish. It's very much, people have the image of driving a Cushman around a golf course and the hesitation and slow speeds and that sort of thing. That's not at all the case now. These cars have every bit the handling and performance expectations of the market. So a significant barrier has been overcome. Additionally, these batteries are able to power the car up to 100 miles, and so the range limitation on a daily basis really is not a factor anymore either. What does remain as a significant barrier, of course, is the cost and the ability to access the power. Several firms, one that folks are probably most familiar with, known as Better Place, which is a Silicon Valley firm based in Palo Alto, have come up with some fairly interesting and innovative business models so that the incremental cost of the battery is excluded from the purchase price of the vehicle. So rather than actually purchasing the car and the battery, you'd purchase the car and then the battery would be to you on a subscription basis with another firm like Better Place. So you would effectively rent the battery and then subscribe to purchase the power as time goes on. Similar in concept to when you buy a car, you certainly don't buy all the gas that you need for the life of the car at that point. That just rolls into your budget, your annual or your monthly budget that you figure out on an annual basis to run your car. Put your gas in it, pay your insurance, et cetera. And Better Place has entered into agreements with Renault Nissan and with some others as well to start manufacturing these cars. And the idea around accessing the batteries themselves and the power comes through the infrastructure that needs to be built in a given locale. Better Place is building out the entire country of Israel, and they intend to have several hundred thousand charging stations as well as transfer stations for when you need to go more than 100 miles. You can pull into a little station, swap out your battery, and you're on your way in 5 minutes. It's very exciting. They're starting the same work in Denmark. They're starting to work with Hawaii, the Bay Area in California, and a few other places as well. Interestingly, some of the major investors in those places are their oil companies starting to hedge their future a little bit and putting a lot of capital dollars. The infrastructure itself You know, all of the capital, this is all going to be handled in the marketplace, in the private sector. I think the market is simply going to have to respond. But, you know, in those places, as is reflected in this bill, you know, a number of public policies have been put in place, working with local units of government to expedite the permitting, as is in this bill. Some other places have put in some incentives to purchase these cars. We're not doing that here, of course. We don't have the dollars. We don't really have the availability to do that within our fees and tax structure anyways. We don't have those kind of increments to offer. But it's very compelling, very exciting, and, of course, we have the Ford plant, and that's soon going to be empty here. We have a tremendous amount of battery technology research and potential battery manufacture that might go on in Minnesota. I really believe the state and the parts of the country and the world that really show that they're open and ready to start adopting this technology early are going to benefit in a much larger fashion, not just the benefit to our environment that's quite obvious from the greenhouse gas emissions that we don't experience, but some real economic benefit. I have, Madam Chair, I have Ethan Folley here from Fresh Energy who would also like to share some thoughts.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ethan Folley. I work at Fresh Energy, which is a statewide organization advocating for a transition to a clean energy system that would include things like transitioning to supporting electric car infrastructure and electric cars generally. To build on a couple of things that Senator Dibble said, and we want to thank Senator Dibble for bringing this important bill forward. In addition to the environmental benefits that related to global reduction of global warming pollution, there's also a significant reduction in other air pollution. The PCA did a report 2 years ago as part of a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle task force. Took a look at what would happen if plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, which are kind of the first step in the electric vehicle technology, were to become more widespread, and what impacts would that have on air pollution. And they showed that pretty much across the board, reductions in air pollution for things like air toxins, particulate matters, other things that cause things like increased risks of cancer, childhood asthma, other very important health issues. So this is not only a step on the environmental side, but it's also a big step forward on the health side. And then specifically related to the energy and the energy committee here, 29% of the state's energy use goes to the transportation sector. It's a huge part of where we send our energy, and this would help us transition to electric vehicles, which have the potential to draw their energy right from renewable sources in Minnesota. And that would be a huge step forward for the state for diversifying our energy portfolio for transportation moving forward. And with all that in mind, this bill provides a great first step to transitioning towards electric vehicles and moving forward with that new technology so we can support that for our children, for our state. So I ask you for your support, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Folley. Are there questions for Senator Dibble? Senator Vanderveer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dibble, I'm looking for how much this costs. Does this have any cost to it?
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Vanderveer, I don't anticipate any cost from this bill.
Providing incentives? Who pays for this?
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, there's no... There's only incentives in the form of, creating, some policy framework, but there's no direct incentive to purchasers or manufacturers.
Other questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have an amendment. That is now the time? I have the A3 amendment.
Do you want to explain the amendment?
Sure.
Do the members have the amendment?
I think Carl. They have it. We'll get it passed out. Madam Chair, I can explain while it's being passed out. At least start the discussion. And I've talked about this with Senator Dibble. This is an amendment that is similar to a bill that I've introduced, and it's an idea that allows for not only some more policy-related incentives for electric cars, but it does it in a way that would create a demand for Minnesota manufacturers to build these electric cars. And so Senator Dibble mentioned the Ford plant. Obviously, that's the only car manufacturing facility in Minnesota. And those of us in St. Paul who are, you know, watching it go through its sort of being on life support for a couple year after year are hoping that eventually we'll be able to find a solution for that plant that will allow it to convert to creating and building some kind of high-efficiency or electric vehicles. And so what this bill does, or what this amendment does, excuse me, the A3 amendment, would put a state procurement requirement in place that would drive that demand for Minnesota to build electric cars and drive the demand for electric cars in general by requiring that state agencies, when they buy cars or vehicles, that at least 25% of those should be electric vehicles. And that's on line 1.10. You'll see that a governing authority that would include the state agencies and MNSCU should ensure that electric vehicles are at least 25% of all purchases made of passenger automobiles on or after July of 2012. So this is 3 years out, and it gives some time for this to become a viable idea because we know that we're not quite there yet. And so then if you go down to paragraphs D and C, it also, you know, this is intended to be a realistic and doable proposal. And it also says in paragraph D that to meet that requirement, you can exclude, you don't have to buy those vehicles if an electric vehicle is not available at a similar cost to a comparable vehicle. So if it's too costly, they don't have to do it. And if there's no electric vehicle capable of meeting the needs for their fleet operations, for the type of vehicle they need, you don't have to buy it. So I think this is meant to be a very practical approach to say if it's too costly or if it's not available, this would not apply. But if the vehicles do exist and are available at a reasonable or comparable cost, then at least 25% of our state purchases of vehicles should be electric. And then finally, oh, and let me, two more points. One is that when you calculate what's available at a similar cost, the definition of a similar cost includes the cost of maintenance and operation over the ownership period of the vehicle. So it's a more realistic cost comparison when you factor in the cost of operating and fueling the vehicle over the period that the state would own it. I don't know how long most state fleet cars are owned, you know, 5 years, 8 years, something like that, 10 years, I don't know. But during that time period, you would factor in the cost savings of the efficiency involved, and then you could compare apples to apples. Finally, section C, paragraph C, I need to point out, requires that the same requirement applies for, and it's specifically designated to pickups, that if a state agency is buying a pickup after 2012, they should buy vehicles made in Minnesota. And so we're hopeful that this would encourage that market for the Ford plant to continue to operate and to continue to manufacture those vehicles. And we would hope that they would be electric pickups at some point in time. But this would, you know, just drive that market and give another incentive to the Ford plant to continue to operate and to continue to move forward. You know, we're all pretty aware that given the current economics of the car companies, that plant probably won't survive unless they dramatically change their operations, and that would mean trying to come up with a vehicle that really is going to meet the needs of the modern consumers and is going to be a high-efficiency vehicle. That's going to be one of the best strategies that they have to keep that plant operating off into the future. So I would move the A3 amendment and be happy to answer questions.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Anderson, I have two questions. One is full-size pickup. You know, they're making the little guys now, so would that be considered in the full-size pickup range? I just want to be sure that
Madam Chair, Senator Olstein, I was wondering about that too, and that's the language that I got from someone over in draft. Maybe we should just delete full size because you're right. It might. Maybe we should be a little broader because that might not work.
Madam Chair, it's certainly not one of Senator Scogin's mini trucks.
Yeah. Maybe just, honestly, when I was just going through this, I'm thinking we should just say either truck or even just say vehicle and then try to align both of these procurement requirements to made in Minnesota vehicles and electric vehicles, whatever type they are, that as long as those are suitable for the fleet requirements.
So, Senator Anderson, do you need to amend your amendment?
I do.
To do that?
Madam Chair, I'd like to, I'm just not sure if I should just change full-size pickup truck to vehicle and just leave it at that. Would that work? I'm not sure if Senator Dibble has an opinion about that. Or just change it to pickup.
Madam Chair, I don't have an opinion. Vehicle's fine. Pickup is fine. Madam Chair, I do think that even though the Ranger is a smallish pickup, it's considered a full size. It's not the little half size. It's not the little bitty ones. And it's not the Scogin bitty little bitty ones. Not the ones next step up. And they are considered full size. And I don't know exactly where this language came from either, though. So,
well, Madam Chair,
whatever you want.
I guess I'd like to,
Senator Anderson,
on line 15, delete the word full size.
Manufactured.
So how do I do this? All those in favor of that change, say aye.
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 Senator Anderson, on section 3, subdivision 1, why do we need this subdivision if we mandate the purchases up above?
I think, Madam Chair, I was trying to understand that, too, and I think it just is a cross-reference from one to the other because it just says in the Minsky statute that they have to follow 16C 135 subdivision 4, which is the number of section 1.
The joint purchasing.
Maybe council can help.
Well, council suggests they already have that and might be redundant.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, on line 7, it does say that they're subject to this subdivision. So that's the question. Why do we have to repeat it, that they have authority in their organic statute? Because I'm sure they're subject to a multiple of laws, and we don't list all laws that they're subject to if they're expressly made subject to, unless there's some inside baseball.
Madam Chair, I believe counsel's right. I guess I don't understand. I didn't know if there was some other reason for this, and the counsel who did the amendment didn't either, so we can just delete it. I don't think it's necessary either, so maybe I should just move to delete section 3.
Are there any questions? Those in favor of the deletion, say aye.
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 Opposed? Senator Anderson?
Motion adopted.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Senator Rummel. Senator Anderson, under subdivision 4, paragraph C, sort of sticks in there a little bit, doesn't look like a paragraph, but you're talking about, I'm looking at where you're requiring the purchase of these trucks be made in Minnesota. Where am I? Oh, up here at section, yes, C. Okay, C. Purchases vehicle manufactured in Minnesota. And I think I understand the goal is to give an advantage to those things that are manufactured in Minnesota to accelerate or support the development of an industry. But I'm uncomfortable having that be open-ended. I really, in most cases, don't like to restrict the competition in that manner. In this case, we'd like to build this industry, and we would like to support the development of that industry, the Ford plant. But I wonder if you'd be open to looking at saying instead of on or after July 1st, 2012, that we would say on or after July 1st, 2012 until 2022. So it sets a limit on how long we require the manufacturing of a vehicle be in Minnesota.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, I don't have any problem with that suggestion. I think that's reasonable to limit it. We're talking about trying to
stimulate
the market. And if it's not stimulated in 10 years, it probably is never going to happen. So it does make sense. I mean, we do have a lot of Minnesota procurement rules already that give preference to Minnesota products. So I think it fits in that that spirit, but I am fine with limiting it. So I would support that. That if you want to move an amendment,
I'll move that amendment. But I'd say I just grabbed 10 years out of the air. I really don't have a sense of what a reasonable time frame would be for a stimulus like that. That's reasonable to allow a company to be operating. And so that number 2022 is mostly a guess, but it's directed at not having it be endless. So I would make that amendment an amendment.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. Senator Anderson, you wanted to comment on that?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess the only thing I would say is I wouldn't want it to be shorter than that, because this company has been talking about the future of that plant. These are really long-term global marketing decisions that the companies are making, and if they have something of that nature that's long-term, it could make a difference in one of their decisions. But if it's short, it might not.
So Senator Sharon?
Yeah, I would make a motion to amend in Amendment A3 on line 1.15, the sentence to say, on or July 1st, 2012, until July 1st, 2022, comma, when purchasing a vehicle.
Any further discussion on that amendment? Those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
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 Aye. Say aye.
We're here.
Opposed? The amendment passes. Senator Dibble, or are there comments on the overall A3 amendment? Further discussion on the overall A3 amendment? Senator Anderson, do you want to move the A3 amendment?
Yes, so moved.
As amended.
As amended.
Madam Chair, I support the amendment.
All those in favor of the amendment as amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment passes. Senator Dibble, is there further discussion on Senator Dibble's bill? Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at page 6, you're adding a new code, building code. Do I understand that correctly?
Senator Vanderveer, I'm sorry, we couldn't hear you.
You're adding a new building code, a new item to the building code, requiring this new infrastructure in all new buildings and remodeled buildings. Is that correct?
I think I need to talk to Senator Vanderveer.
Madam Chair.
Members, we're on section 9, page 6.
6 and 7, Madam Chair. Senator Vanderveer.
Senator Dibble.
Yes.
And that doesn't have any cost?
Senator Dibble.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I think there's this doesn't go into effect until 2012, for starters. Secondly, we waive it down to through the amendment just to 10% for the parking as well as for the multifamily structures. And it's Senator Representative Hornstein has been talking with and speaking to the builders, and they felt very comfortable, as far as I know, as reported by Representative Hornstein, with this provision.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, do you have an idea what that would cost in a typical, say, parking ramp or multifamily building?
Senator Dibble?
Did they give you any cost numbers since?
Madam Chair, no, they didn't. Senator Vanderveer, no, they did not. But there might be folks here who can
maybe
let us know.
Is there anyone who can answer Senator Vanderveer's question present? Is there further discussion on the amended bill?
Madam Chair, I'll move.
Senator Dibble?
And I'll talk to Senator Vanderveer if this moves on its merry way. And we need to go to state and local government. So, Madam Chair, I'll move Senate File 916 as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to State and Local Government Committee.
Is there any discussion on Senator Sharon?
I just wanted to, I was hoping that somebody would be able to respond to Senator Vandeveer's question. I think it's an important question. This goes into building codes as opposed to the other issue, and I would just share that I would need a lot more information, and I would have serious concerns about this particular portion of the bill.
Senator Dibble renews his motion. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
This bill moves on to state and local.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
I think parking, I think these would be okay, but not this.
So you'll meet with them on that.
Senator Pappas, we're going to be hearing Senate File 1430.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1430, the purpose of Senate File 1430 is to promote solar energy use, develop effective energy storage technology for the smart grid, and create new union green jobs in Minnesota. The bill clarifies certain definitions relating to qualifying solar energy, solar electric projects. The bill makes two amendments to the current statute. The bill clarifies that a qualifying solar electric project may also include on-site energy storage equipment, and also clarifies that a qualifying solar electric project can be installed in a residential, commercial, or publicly owned building. The current statute would not permit such a project in a publicly owned building or a larger commercial building. I have with me today, Madam Chair, Vice President Al Christensen with Energy Harvest Group, which is a Minnesota-based company whose principals have been working in the solar energy area for several years. EHG has been working in partnership with the IBEW Local 110, and unfortunately, Mr. Brian Winkler from IBEW had to leave to pick up his children from daycare and couldn't be with us. But anyway, they formed a joint venture with iCell Systems of California to open a new assembly plant in Minnesota to begin assembling and installing the patented iCell energy storage units in public and commercial buildings. And to tell you more about the project, I have Mr. Christensen.
Madam Chair, members of the committee,
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Al Christensen, and I'm Vice President of Energy Harvest Group. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for your time today and this opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate File 1430. And I just have a couple of bullets here that I want to cover. The iCell energy storage units, which I have with me today, the iCell energy storage units use a lithium-ion cell technology combined with the iCell patented energy storage technology system, which is different from the standard battery, as it can charge and discharge simultaneously. The lithium-ion cell technology has several life cycle costs and environmental benefits over lead-acid and nickel-cadmium batteries, including environmentally sound disposal and end of life. Energy Harvest Group will create up to 500 new union green jobs in Minnesota over the next 3 years in the assembly and installation of the iCell energy storage units that will contribute to the green economy as defined by state statute. All assembly plant employees and installing electricians will be members of the IBEW, and the first assembly plant will be located in St. Paul. Energy Harvest Group is also forming partnerships with several major Minnesota union electrical contractors, such as Parsons and Hunt and Muska Electric, to begin working with their business customers to install the iCell energy storage units. Energy Harvest Group is working closely with the state's public utility companies in bringing the iCell energy storage production to Minnesota and is currently working with Xcel Energy to install the first solar panels on commercial property on University Avenue in St. Paul as part of the energy corridor aimed at addressing the additional energy needs created by the Central Corridor LRT system. I also want to point out that this bill has been discussed by the major with the major utilities, and they have no objections. And lastly, I just want to point out the proposed amendment will allow Energy Harvest Group and the IBEW to work more successfully with the public utilities, government organizations, and private commercial property owners to install the ICEL energy storage units along with qualifying solar energy projects and help create these new union green jobs, or as they would like to call, careers in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any discussion on the bill? Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if, is this a capacitor? Or I'm not sure what role this plays. So could you go into that a little bit?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Winkler.
It's Christensen.
I'm sorry.
We had a substitution. I forgot to explain that.
Thank you.
It actually is an intelligent energy storage device. Could also be called a supercapacitor. It does have the ability to charge and discharge at the same time, and you can control the discharge.
Senator Olsen.
I hate to bring this up because, but I would like an answer. So maybe there were in our local paper, they were running ads saying, you know, save electricity, save 25% on your electric bill, put in this capacitor. And I had one of our local power companies come and tell me that, you know, this is bogus. And so I was explained to me that these capacitors really just level the load and they don't really store energy. But now yours sounds like something different than that. So
that's correct. This is patented technology that comes out of California. The patent owner has a history in the chip sector. Started out his career with Intel and then with Apple. Essentially, this is ICEL stands for Integrated Cell of Electric Lithium. The medium, the storage medium, may change over time, but in the patented technology is the intelligence of it, thus moving forward the smart grid. So yes, it is an intelligent energy storage device, and the part that makes it a capacitor is its ability to charge and discharge.
Additional questions or comments? The motion for this bill would to move Senate File 1430 be laid over and recommended for inclusion in a committee omnibus bill. Is there a senator who wishes to make that motion?
I'll make the motion.
Senator Olsen. Is there further discussion? Excuse me.
Madam Chair, and this may have already been addressed, and I'm sorry I just got here, but on line 216, has there been discussion about why a small business regarded as commercial? Is that just redundant? Okay. Thank you.
Senator Olsen, I assume you
I would renew that motion.
Renews his motion. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Senate file 1430 is been moved to be laid over and sent on to included in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
What do we have, Senator Pappas? I'm so terrible. I'm paying attention. Committee members, Senate File 526, Senator Yvonne Pretner-Solon on electric transmission and infrastructure adequacy. The legislative report. Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I have the A1 amendment, which is an author's amendment. I'm not sure if you have that or if it needs to be passed out.
Does everyone have the amendment?
Yes.
Yeah, I would move the A1 amendment. Just some clarifying language.
Senator Pretner-Solon moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Yes.
The amendment passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Earlier this session, we heard updates from the utilities regarding their progress toward reaching the state's renewable energy standard. While I was happy to hear that they are all on target to meet their renewable mandates, we heard repeatedly about the obstacles that they have encountered in accessing the infrastructure to bring wind energy onto the grid. The report that was issued by the Office of Energy Security on the Renewable Energy Standard compliance states the following, quote, "The OES sought utility comment on obstacles the utilities have encountered or anticipate encountering to meet the RES requirements. Transmission constraints and the rising cost and availability of equipment were the two areas repeatedly cited by the utilities as potential obstacles. With respect to transmission constraints, the lack of available transmission in areas with significant wind resources was frequently cited as an obstacle. In addition, utilities expressed concern with the size of the MISO queue and general long lead times for development of additional transmission resources from the planning to the implementation stage," end of quote. Therefore, it is critical that we have a better understanding of what our transmission needs are over the next 15 years and what is being done to meet the needs. This is a simple bill instructing the Commissioner of Commerce to provide a report of the adequacy of electric transmission within the state over the next 15 years, the process and the barriers to meeting that need, and recommendations for overcoming those barriers. And I'd like to invite Beth Soholt from Wind on the Wires to offer some testimony.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Partner Solon and members. My name is Beth Soholt. I am director of Wind on the Wires, which is a project of the Isaac Walton League. It is a collaboration between a handful of environmental organizations in the upper Midwest and organizations involved in wind development. We do support this bill. As you are probably aware from just the small amount of testimony the committee has received this year, there is a lot going on in transmission planning and studying, both by the Minnesota utilities, by the Midwest Independent System Operator, and really across the country, and particularly in the Eastern Interconnect, where our utilities reside. In addition, transmission has received a lot of federal attention lately, with President Obama mentioning transmission in many of his speeches, as well as we now have three bills in Congress that have been proposed by Senator Reid, by Senator Bingaman, and by Representative Inslee that really talk about the need for adequate transmission planning and infrastructure across the country to achieve a number of objectives, including renewable energy standard. This bill really would bring information to this committee. There are going to be many public policy issues that the committee will need to consider in achieving the RES by 2025, including transmission. And this bill would put the committee in the loop, if you will, on what's going on transmission planning and studying, as well as bring issues to the committee proactively that need to be addressed, such as the things Senator Prettner-Solon has mentioned in her remarks. So some of the public policy questions that this committee will have to address include things like, do we want to build enough transmission to just meet our in-state renewable energy standard, or do we want to eventually be an exporter of renewable electricity? And so this report would provide the context and the study and the information to the committee to be able to consider some of those issues. And so for that reason, and primarily for the reason that it said the report must be easily understood and in non-technical terms, I think that's very important given how complex this subject can be. And so we do support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Soholt. Is there discussion on the bill? Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, and to the author, and I don't know if you have the bill in front of you, Senator Solon, but on line 19, after it talks about submit a written report to the chairs, would you be amenable to an amendment that said and ranking members?
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, I'm sorry, that was an omission. Yes, definitely. Okay. I would be agreeable to that amendment.
Would you like to make that motion, Senator St. John?
Madam Chair and members, I would move then that on one line after chairs, we insert the language and ranking members.
And the ranking minority members. And the ranking
Madam
members.
Chair, if that's the advice of Senate Counsel, I would accept that revision.
Discussion on the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment passes. Further discussion on the bill. Then, Senator Prettner-Solon, I believe you have a motion.
Madam Chair, I don't know if there's anybody that wants to speak for or against this bill.
Is there anyone who wishes to speak for or against the bill?
Okay. Madam Chair, then I would move that this bill be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill, the omnibus energy bill.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Senate file 526 has been moved and recommended for inclusion in the committee omnibus bill. Senator Prettner-Solon, Senate file 1213.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I also have a author's amendment for this bill. It's the A1 amendment.
Do the committee members have that amendment?
Madam Chair, I can discuss that if you like.
Thank you, Senator.
This amendment actually amends two subdivisions of the Certificate of Need Law that provide exemptions from the Certificate of Need Law for large wind and solar generating facilities, and wind would be 50 megawatts or more, that would otherwise require certificates of need. And one of the subdivisions being amended grants a narrow exemption for certain wind facilities and was enacted first? Okay. The second subdivision grants a broader exemption and by its terms appears to exempt all the facilities exempted by Subdivision 8. Thus, there does not appear to be a need for both subdivisions, and having them both invites confusion. So it is removing that.
Thank you, Sam. Is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment passes. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Office of Energy Security brought this bill forward as a way to save both the Public Utilities Commission and the Office of Energy Security, as well as wind projects, time and money by exempting large wind projects, as I said, those over 50 megawatts, from having to go through the Certificate of Need process. Projects under 50 megawatts already have this exemption from Certificate of Need process. When the legislature enacted the renewable energy standard, we answered the question of need. Given the aggressive renewable energy standards, all wind projects that have been proposed or are even being contemplated will be able to be used for compliance with the renewable energy standard and therefore meet this need that was defined by the legislature. This bill does not change the regulatory siting process. It simply allows large wind projects to expedite a regulatory certificate of need process where the legislature has already defined that a need exists. It has the potential to save significant staff time and resources at the Office of Energy Security and the Public Utilities Commission, and also saving the wind projects the money of hiring attorneys and going through the process. At this time, I would like to invite Mariah White to provide some testimony on the legislation.
Welcome, Ms. White.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. We very much appreciate Senator Prentice-Solon bringing this to us. The Office of Energy Security takes our charge, our statutory charge of protecting the or looking out for the public interest and utility customers very seriously. Last Tuesday, one of the bills you heard had a number of testifiers, one of which was Otter Tail Power, and Otter Tail Power talked to you about the extensive review they received in rate cases and requests for information in the hundreds. Well, that's us. That's what we do. Utilities don't like it very much sometimes, but we take our charge very seriously to uncover every rock we can see, turn it over and see if there perhaps is something that may not be in the public interest. Certificates of need are another way that we do a lot of intensive scrutiny on, as it should be for large energy facilities. And we continue to do that. But it also seemed to us that when, as Senator Prentice-Solon said, when you enacted the Renewable Energy Standard, you essentially told us that bottom line, wind energy was needed to comply with the Renewable Energy Standard. And that's good enough for us. So that's why we're here to continue the exemptions that you have already enacted in prior sessions to exempt wind from certificate of need. You have already exempted seabed projects, and you've already exempted wind projects at 49 megawatts and below. This would also exempt 50 megawatts and above for wind projects, and potentially for other renewable projects as well. I'm not speaking as much about those simply because we haven't had large projects and large enough to trip the certificate of need proposal to date with different types of renewable projects. We're hopeful we will in the future, but right now wind is the big game for renewables. So that's why we're bringing the bill to you for your consideration, and that's the bottom line. The other half of the regulatory process for wind projects is the scrutiny it goes through for siting, where the project's going to be placed on the ground. We look at environmental impacts, we look at social impacts, we look at biology, we look at botany, we look at a whole number, air quality, water quality, everything like that. None of that is touched. Those are very important in our mind, impacts that need to be addressed, need to continue to be addressed. That's part of the state law that you passed, that you have enacted in the past, and that's part of federal law too. None of that is touched. This is just the certificate of need portion of the regulatory process that wind projects go through.
Thank you, Ms. White. Is there discussion on the bill? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a reason it doesn't mention renewable energy standard? Does that come in under the resource plans? I mean, it just mentions the objective. Is that, yeah, just explain why, how you did the references.
Certainly. The 216B1691, the renewable energy objective and renewable energy standard are all covered under that one mm-hmm. reference. So we left it as a generic reference. So it's the whole thing is covered.
Well, Madam Chair, after 2010, it's going to be called the Renewable Energy Standard. So I wonder if we should say, refer to both of those. Otherwise, the statute won't be very, once it's 2010, it won't make sense anymore. Maybe we should say Renewable Energy Objective or Standard or something like that. Does that make sense? I'm asking, wondering, Council.
Senator Anderson, where are we?
I'm on line 1.28, and it references, if the wind project is intended to meet the renewable energy objective under 216B.1691.
Senator Anderson, you're not on the amendment. That whole section's been taken out.
It says delete everything.
Amendment A1?
Yeah, I am on the A1 amendment.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's what those lines are.
Never mind. I'll babysit her for a little bit.
Senator.
I need to eat some cookies or something. Never mind.
Further discussion.
What's in the bill?
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 1213 as amended be
Laid on the table.
Yeah, no, be laid. Be
and recommended for inclusion.
Recommended for inclusion in the omnibus bill. Yes, I'm sorry.
On the motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate File 1213 is laid on the table.
Just a little comic relief for everyone. It's right there. My eyes aren't that bad. I just thought that type is pretty fuzzy.
6 cents.
This is real.
Oh, dear.
I missed a thing. We're going to do these backwards.
Yeah. Good one. Yeah.
Members, we're on Senate File 670. Welcome to the table, Ms. Kevin, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and fellow committee members. We are just flip-flopping the agenda here a little bit. This should take about 5 minutes. I do have the A1 amendment to Senate File 670. I'd like to move that.
I'm sorry, Senator Dahl, I got distracted. Do you want to say that again?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Committee members, do you have the A1 amendment? Yeah. I have the A1 amendment. I do. On Senator Dahl's motion, is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment passes. Senator Dahl.
Yes, this is, if you recall from last session, the strategic tree planting bill. We actually moved that bill, which actually would require strategic tree planting be part of the CIP program. We actually passed that particular bill on the Senate floor 63-1. Now, that bill somehow, some reason, got hung up in the House. And so this is actually... Well, I think the Senate might have been okay with that particular language. As you can see in the amendment, we're really changing, just adding a sentence on line 232. A utility design assistance program must consider the strategic planting of trees and shrubs around buildings as an energy conservation strategy for the design project. So we're not requiring anyone, we would hope, and if you recall the testimony that we gave last year, there's great evidence that shows strategic tree planting can save hundreds of dollars on average energy bills, and it's just the right thing to do for the environment. I do have a testifier, and I'll let him speak, and we'll be open for questions.
Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Stennis. I'm a forester and a plant pathologist by post-secondary education. I work as a master arborist for SNS tree specialists in South St. Paul. If for what it's worth, I'm the past president of the Minnesota Society of Arboriculture and also the past president of the Minnesota Turf and Grounds Foundation. Also with me here today representing the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association is Tim Power. He's the past president, immediate past president of that organization. And we're kind of here to support and promote this legislation because it's easy to do. It's really warm, fuzzy kind of stuff. and the issue basically is about measuring the money or the advantage or what we gain by planting trees. And we have tools. And in your packet, there's a very brief summary of a 100-page document on a Midwest Community Tree Guide that was prepared by research done mostly here in Minneapolis by a fellow named Greg McPherson, and it summarizes a powerful document. And the bottom line is that environmental benefits can be quantified, they can be measured, and that's benefits minus the cost, just in terms of energy savings, stormwater runoff reduction, and the cost of handling that, Reduced air pollution, if only because of the amount of CO2 the trees take up, reduces the amount of CO2 that comes out our stacks. And the benefits were 3 to 5 times the total tree care and planting costs for small, medium, and large trees. And just a couple of little examples here. The net benefits for a residential yard tree opposing a west wall over a 40-year period. And these tree sizes refer to the stature of the plants, not their age, not young, medium, and old. That's crab apples to towering elm trees. Over a 40-year period, a small tree had a net value of $600. A medium-sized tree, $1,360. And a large tree, a mature tree, is $3,040 over 40 years. Well, that's a real measure. This is dollars, ways that we could spend it, and it summarized how this is determined in this little brief document, if you ever find time to read it. But it doesn't really require a PhD in theoretical physics to feel it. You know, if, for example, the next time you cross the street from here over to the state capitol or the state office building, as soon as you step off the street and onto the sidewalk and into the shade and shelter of those locusts over there, those new locusts, you already feel it. And it gets to be enhanced as you get under the shade of those large canopied American elm there, and it's cooling due more than just the shade. Truth is, most of the energy absorption is in the form of sweat in forests. The water they transpire, they take out of the ground that doesn't go into our stormwater and cools the atmosphere as it's evaporated from the leaves. And that's a larger component of the cooling than just the shadow. And that's why it's so comforting. So it's, you know, I'm not fully aware of all the ins and outs of the politics, but I do have a reasonably well-informed opinion about good energy policy and good energy use. And this legislation makes sense at every turn.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stennis?
Stennis,
thank you. So you're saying, though, that a strategic tree planting process is not any more expensive than just a normal landscaping process. There's no extra cost.
Oh, no, there's no extra cost at all. That's the beauty in this warm, fuzzy stuff. It's a net positive no matter how you measure it or what component of it you ever employ.
Senator Sharon.
We're all been up too late, too many nights in a row. Thank you. I was curious if Senator Dahl, if you would consider, I'm looking at this, this really is a building performance standards. We're talking about standards in order to achieve cost-effective energy efficiency performance. And it trains architects to incorporate these things in their design and planning. So, along with what it is that you're proposing in the bill, I wonder if you had considered or would consider adding something that was in another bill that we discussed earlier, and that would be some language that would say not only would we do strategic planting of trees, they would do that as a performance standard, but the processes and provisions for installation of electric vehicle infrastructure.
Senator Sharon, can you tell us where you're at?
I'm looking at page 2, where 2.32, where the language is being added to Senator Dahl's bill about the design assistance program must consider the strategic planting of trees. And I'm simply wondering if you'd be open to also adding language that would say, following, instead of the period, say, and the processes and provision for installation of electric vehicle infrastructure. If you've considered that, if that is outside the scope of what this is about. But I do think as we move forward to electric cars, that in the earlier legislation we're talking about requiring that as a building code standard for households, but this certainly is a place where if you establish standards, if they're not required, it would not be required. This is sort of providing the best standards that that we might include that.
Madam Chair, I don't know. I don't know. This, if you think it relates to conservation improvement in that regard, which that most of that paragraph addresses. I do know that this particular language is equal to the House bill that's currently moving in the House, so I'm a little reluctant.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do also question the germaneness of this, and if you are talking about adding it to your current proposal or language, and then I think there is going to be a cost associated with that. And so I'd feel more comfortable if we just kept it with the what you're proposing, Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, and I agree. I would prefer to leave it, find another route for your concerns. Thanks.
Further discussion on the bill?
Senator
Sharon.
I need to have some clarification on this because they're talking about additional costs, and I may be misunderstanding what we're talking about here. This is building performance standards. I don't read anything in here that requires the application of these standards in any building code. This is simply talking about, for the purposes, if I understand correctly, training architects to incorporate performance standards in building design. So I don't know that there's a cost associated with it, so I don't think it's unreasonable to consider that you might, as they think about the design and construction of commercial, industrial, and institutional buildings, that they look at, in that design, providing for a futuristic concept of electrically powered vehicles.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
All of us, the subdivision E there, is really talking about conservation improvement programs and energy efficiency goals. And while you may have something there, I think talking about tree planting is addressing both of those issues, energy conservation and energy efficiency. And I'm not sure your particular item addresses those specific items. Maybe in the bigger picture of Subdivision 9 building performance standards, but in E, I think it might be a little messy to start throwing electric vehicle wording in there.
You know, it's close.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I think it's a really good idea to include this in the concept. I wonder if Senator Dahl really doesn't want it in his bill. It's too bad Senator Dibble stepped out, because we could amend this onto Senator Dibble's bill as an addition to the 2030 law, because it really does make sense that when we're talking about the utility technical assistance, that they're part of achieving these 2030 goals. It makes sense for them to be including other kinds of innovative energy savings ideas, which plug-in car infrastructure in buildings is another piece of. So there's Senator Dibble, and Senator Sharon proposed. Madam Chair, or
Senator Anderson,
you want to speak to?
Senator Sharon.
It was your idea.
Senator Sharon.
All right.
Well, I'm looking at the bill in which Senator Dahl is adding some important language that should be considered, I think, when we're taking a look at building performance standards. I'm not speaking against that. It just strikes me that this, when we're talking about building performance standards, that this is another place where we should be looking at, if not here, somewhere, and when we're talking about building standards, that you train architects to think about when they're designing buildings, that we ask them to think about the provision of an installation of electric vehicle infrastructure, that ought to be a part of a sustainable building process for the future. But what Senator Dahl is saying is that it doesn't exactly fit with the concept that he's addressing in his language here, but I'm still believing that there ought to be a place where we take a look at including this. If we're going to be stimulating this industry, then our architects ought to be thinking about building the infrastructure so that people can use electric vehicles. So that's where we're sitting, and you address that some in your bill. So that's where Senator Anderson started to say, and I'll let her communicate her own message.
Senator Anderson.
Okay.
Or when, maybe why don't we go to Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, let me just say that Senator Dahl had some concern about putting this in his bill, and so I was just suggesting perhaps you could amend this into your bill and just include a reference in the 2030 requirements to, this is about the Utilities Design Assistance Program, not specifically the architect's part of it, and I don't know, it might make sense to be in both places, but to include references in your bill, you could add that as an amendment to your bill, I suppose, if that would be a better option.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair. It's an excellent suggestion, and I thank Senator Sharon for picking up on it. What I will commit to doing is getting in touch with the folks at the Center for Sustainable Building Research, and I already know them somewhat from past policy proposals that we worked on together, and maybe that's a good perhaps addition and perhaps change to my bill. So before I go to state and local government, I'll take a close look at that, and maybe it'll be a change to the building code piece, or maybe an addition or a reference or something like that. So it's a great suggestion. I like it quite a bit. Thank you, and I'll stay in contact with Senator Sharon and Senator Vanderveer, because they expressed the most interest in that subject as we shape that idea up.
Is there additional conversation or discussion on this point or this bill? Senator Sharon.
Since we're sort of off the subject, I have to, and since Senator Anderson already put her head on the table for missing something in amendment, I have to admit I was telling Senator Senjum that I vehemently opposed something. I think I was as vehement as I've ever been about opposing something, and then I read it again and realized I guess I don't really oppose it all that much, so I just have to fess up. And I know I was vehement, but I misread the language. So,
thank you, Senator Sharon.
Appreciate the strength of passion.
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Dahl, do you want to make a motion?
I'll move Senate file 670 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Energy Omnibus Bill.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Or same sign. Motion adopted. Senator Kevin Dahl has Senate File 841 on residential energy use disclosure.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do have Senate File 841, and I am going to be offering an oral amendment. I apologize for that, but somewhere between now and yesterday and the 10 committees I've been in, I missed the amendment that we had drafted. But I'll bring that up shortly. What you have in front of you in Senate File 841 is a residential energy use disclosure study and report. And the way this bill came about is, of course, you all remember reading the Progress in Addressing Climate Change, this 65-page document about the greenhouse gas emissions, the MCAG report. And in the MCAG report, and another chart that you all have somewhere in a pile on your desk, one of the recommendations from MCAG was RCI 8, the Energy Performance Disclosure, and I'll just briefly read that to you. Requires utilities to provide an energy performance disclosure and energy consumption history to parties owning any public, commercial, or residential property, but also require property owners to make disclosure and history available to prospective buyers or renters, develop a task force of utilities and parties of concern to devise a uniform utility information standard. Now, Governor Plenty, was not opposed, but he does have some concerns about maybe the timing, but I think it is something that we should certainly consider. I also would just add a page or a comment on one of the pages in this particular document. And if you have to leave, go ahead. There are several examples of current state programs or initiatives involving energy performance disclosure. Florida has a separate statutory requirement pertaining to existing and new homes. Kansas requires prospective buyers of new homes, including multifamily buildings, receive an energy efficiency disclosure form. Maine enacted an energy efficiency disclosure form requirement for rentals in 06. It must be posted in properties before being offered for rent. California has done similar things. Even cities have considered enacting energy performance disclosure requirements at the local level. For example, the Montgomery Council in Maryland passed a bill in 08 of last year, April of 08. So it's gaining ground across the United States. And what the bill does then, members, just calls together a committee that would study, quite simply, study the possibility that they could develop a disclosure form that addresses several key areas. So if I could offer the oral amendment at this time.
Go ahead, Mr. Senator Dahl.
On line 120, line 120, after apartment owners, comma, include tenant advocates. Tenant advocates. And then it continues, manufactured home park owners. After manufactured home park owners on the same line, comma, add a nonprofit organization representing manufactured home park residents. I'll repeat that. After the comma, after manufactured home park owners, add a nonprofit organization representing manufactured home park residents. And, Madam Chair, the reason we look at the stakeholders in this particular study, it has owners, real estate professionals, utilities, energy advocates, consumers. You might argue the consumers might be also the people living in the mobile home parks or apartments, but we wanted to make sure the residents were included in the stakeholders group as well. I have with me Ron Elwood, and he would like to say a few words about the bill as well.
Before we do that, do we need to adopt the oral amendment?
Please. I'd like to move that amendment.
Is there any discussion on the oral amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes. Mr. Elwood.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. I'd like to thank Senator Dahl for bringing this bill forward and for adding the amendment, which I think balances out the study group. Just want to bring to your attention that this is not 100% new in Minnesota. We actually already have somewhat of a precedent in existing law regarding disclosure of this nature in the landlord-tenant statutes, section 504B.215, where there is a single-metered building and one meter serves many units in an apartment, there's already a requirement that a prospective tenant be provided with the kind of information that Senator Dahl's bill would have provided to tenants in single-family buildings and to homeowners, the prospective homeowners. I think the idea of providing information about the magnitude of usage, the potentially where the source of energy comes from, all sorts of things would provide renters and homeowners with good information to make choices about where they want to buy and live. Also, the study group, if it moves forward, would be a good opportunity to determine what kind of information should be provided, the format it should be provided in, because that's really important. I know the realtors folks provide some of this information already, but I think this would be a good opportunity to bring all the stakeholders together to do something that would be of real use to homeowners, prospective homeowners, and prospective tenants. Thank you.
I'm not sure where we are. Mr. Elwood, did you have something?
He just got to.
Okay. Questions or comments on the bill?
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author, Senator Dahl. Going to line 122, would you be amenable also to an amendment similar to what we offered in a recent bill to add after chairs and ranking minority members?
Madam Chair, Senator
Dahl.
Yes, I would be happy to add that amendment.
Madam
Chair. Line 123 after chairs of, after chairs of committee and, would it be and ranking minority members?
Madam Chair, and ranking minority members, I think is what Senate Counsel advocated for.
Okay, on Senator Senjum's motion that on line 1.22 after chairs add and ranking minority members, is there a okay. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Dahl.
Come to my attention. Well, it was someone was going to ask, does this cost anything? Well, there is a fiscal note, and I do have a solution, perhaps, maybe, to take away the fiscal note. The fiscal note was, unbelievably, $50,000. Couldn't believe it. But anyway, if if we could change again, instead of the Commissioner of Commerce, if the Legislative Energy Commission took this on, would it, I understand, would it not have a fiscal note?
Senator Dahl, that's correct. The Legislative Energy Commission would absorb any costs.
May I make that amendment, Madam Chair, on line 17, and where appropriate, 119, I believe.
Where's that? Okay. I see. Okay, then Senator Dahl moves that on line 1.7, the Commissioner of Commerce would be replaced with the Legislative Energy Commission. And on lines 1.19 and 1.21, Commissioner would be replaced with Legislative Energy Commission. The Commission, I guess, just the Commission. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question about this oral amendment would be, we've been talking in the commission, the LEC, about our goals and what we would like to study. Is this going to stay in line with the agenda that we are looking at? I'm not saying I'm opposed to it. I'm not saying I'm agreeing to it. I'm just want some clarification on where we're heading with that commission.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
I don't know exactly what the agenda is, but I would hope that they would be considering some of the MCAG recommendations, which this is.
Senator Dahl, Senator Rosen, this does give direction to the Legislative Energy Commission, so they would be required to do this. That's true. Any further discussion? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Senator Dahl, another one I'd ask you to think about, and that would be to include, since this does involve new homes, on the stakeholder group, a representative from the home construction industry. Would you be amenable to language for an amendment that would include somebody from home construction?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Sure.
Madam Chair and Senator Dahl, you're most kind.
I'll move that.
Okay.
Or Senjum does, I guess.
Senator
Senjum does.
Mr. Fuller, have you a recommendation regarding that?
It's irrelevant.
1.20 after the second comma there. When I say residential builders or
home builders.
Residential construction company, residential builders, I think is.
Madam Chair and
Senator Sanchez,
from the proposer's perspective, I think that makes a point and would be sufficiently adequate.
Okay.
So I would accept that. If it's okay with the author.
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, that's fine.
Okay. On Senator Senchem's motion then that after the second comma on line 1.20, we add residential builders, comma. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Senator Prettner-Solden, did we act on the other amendment? Did we take an action on changing the Commissioner of Commerce to the Legislative Energy Commission?
Yes.
We did.
Thank you. How did I vote?
Madam Chair.
Just one moment, Senator Dahl. Okay, Senator Dahl.
Unless there's other testimony, I'd move Senate File 841 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Energy Omnibus Bill.
Okay. Senator Dahl's moves that Senate File 840 be laid over for inclusion in the Omnibus Bill. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee.
Ripping through this.
I listened to the tape.
Anderson, 1642. We took double. Okay, Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1642 is a reform bill, a bill about trying to think big about the future. And what inspires this for me is a thought I've had over the last few years that it's time to elevate the discussion about energy policy in this state to a higher level. And I think in the legislature, we've been doing that, and a large part because of the work of this committee,
just me,
and certainly other committees, but especially this committee, we've been talking about and acting upon long-term major changes in our energy policy a lot in recent years. And I think that those changes are just beginning, and that we're looking in Washington at other big picture changes to how our whole energy economy works.
Oh, thank you.
And what I've been thinking is that the bill that I introduced the last couple of years would have created a standalone cabinet-level energy agency for our state. And, you know, through our state's past number of decades, we've had all kinds of different iterations of where the energy department or the energy office is located, and it's been in a lot of different places, and it's been paired up with a lot of different state agencies. And I've thought a number of years that it needs to be higher level, it needs to be more visible, and it needs to be a more influential agency for our state to help us move forward in the big, you know, the big job that we have set cut out for ourselves and continue to do in the area of energy. This year I decided to change that proposal a little bit because it's hard to think this year about creating a new state agency. You know, given our budget problems that we're facing and those constraints, I tried to think about it in a more reform-oriented way to figure out how we could streamline state government and still highlight and improve the what we already have in our state energy office and make that more visible and more significant and cabinet level work. So that's what inspires this bill. And so what I came up with for sort of a new improved reform approach to energy policy in Minnesota is to take the offices that relate to energy in the State Department of Commerce and pair them up with our pollution control agency and create a new agency that would be called the Department of, I can't remember if it's an agency or a department, sorry, the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, and it puts energy right at the beginning of the title. And so it's important for me to say that this move would be done to highlight the work that we do on energy in the state of Minnesota. But also I think it's a logical place to put it. I've often wondered why, whether energy is a good fit with the rest of commerce that is focused primarily on business, banking, and insurance regulation. And so the bill reconfigures those agencies. And what I'm proposing is to combine energy and environmental protection into one agency, but also to combine labor and industry and the other parts of commerce into one agency. So the net effect would be one less state agency, and that's where the reform and streamlining comes in. So the Department of Labor and Industry would be merged into the Commerce Department, and that would create a new agency called the Department of Labor and Commerce. And then we'd have PCA would be renamed and merged, and we'd have the agency or the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. The Department of Labor and Industry would be repealed. And I do have an amendment, Madam Chair, and I'd like to propose this as an author's amendment and just get the bill in the proper shape before we vote on it. So it's the A3 amendment, but I need to add a couple of changes to it before we vote on it. I'd ask if that could be passed out, and then I'll propose a couple of additions to that amendment.
Senator Anderson, it's being passed out. Do you want to describe it as?
Yes. It's very straightforward. It deletes Section or Article 3, which is some ideas that really don't fit anymore. They were part of an earlier draft, and so I just want to delete the changes made in Article 3 that relate to some parts of the Commerce Department, and I think we should just leave those be. It also puts in some language that says that, that collective bargaining agreements wouldn't be affected by this. And then I'd like to add two other things. One is to change the effective date of this bill and give it a year. So under the current draft, the effective date of Senate File 1642 is on page 7. So I guess on 7.19, I'd want to change the effective date from 2009 to 2010. So it'd give
Do you want that to be August or July?
August 1st is fine, I guess. Or does it make more sense to do it on the fiscal year? July 1st? Okay. So I would change on 7.19 from August 1st, 2009, change that to July 1st, 2010. I think that's a little more realistic for something of this magnitude, is to allow a little time for a transition. And then finally, my other amendment is on page 7, line 2. After chairs, I'd like to insert and ranking minority members. See, I have been paying attention a little bit today. So I'd like to incorporate those additions and offer the A3 then as an author's amendment.
Senator Anderson, I'm aware that you have another effective date listed on page 11, line 11. No, line 9.
That's part of Article 3, so that should be deleted.
That's Article 2.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where are you? On line
page 11, line 9.
Page 9? She said page 9.
No.
No, line 9.
Line 9, page 11. 11.9.
And I'm not sure why we have two effective dates in here. Someone tell
it's
me why.
Two different articles.
Okay, I guess we need to make the change on both of those to July 1st, 2010.
What change is this?
Do people understand the motion then? Senator, and this is your first This is your first hearing on the bill, Senator Anderson?
It is, Madam Chair.
Okay. So Senator Anderson offers the A3 amendment with three oral amendments. The first is on page 7, line 2. After chairs, add and ranking minority members. On line 7.19, change August 1st, 2009 to July 1st, 2010. And on page 11, line 9, change August 1st, 2009 to July 1st, 2010. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
So, Madam Chair, the bill in the shape that it's in now is really just the framework that I described. It's the move of energy to PCA and that merger, the move of Dolly to Commerce and that merger, and the elimination of Dolly and 1 year from this summer for that to take effect. So I'd be I have Michael Noble has offered to speak in support of this bill, so I ask that he could testify next.
Okay, Mr. Noble.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Noble. I'm the executive director of Fresh Energy, and I'm appreciative of Senator Anderson proposing this reform in state government. As this committee over the years has learned, energy affects everything in our lives and our economy. It's an issue that relates to our nation's security. It relates to our prosperity of our economy, and it's a core issue in protection of our environment. And to be able to have in state government a cabinet-level position with the word energy at the top of the name of the department signifies that importance that this committee has understood and acted on over the years. Right now, I think it is kind of a second sister to issues of in the Commerce Department of banking and insurance and telecommunications. And not to say anything adverse about the work of the Office of Energy Security, but to give cabinet-level stature to a Commissioner of Energy and Environmental Protection would elevate these issues and begin to integrate the issues of environmental protection and energy security. Right now, we have two completely separate agencies that are responsible for protecting the environment and securing our energy sources. And as this committee knows so well, these issues are really, you know, two sides of the same coin. You know, we can't have a prosperous economy unless we secure our environment, and it's proper to have these two issues in the same state agency. I might also just point out that the name, you know, Pollution Control Agency is kind of an old-fashioned name going back to the 70s, and I think it would be a modest benefit, but a significant benefit to have a Department of Energy and Environmental Protection really is more the mission of both agencies under one roof. Also, I think right now the way the agencies are structured, there is often a debate as to where responsibility properly lie. And the perfect example of this is all the work that was done in the last few years on the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. There were sub-cabinet-level assistant commissioners from both agencies who worked on that. But if you ask this committee which of the two agencies was primarily responsible for it, you know, that'd be a difficult question to answer because climate change is over in the environmental protection area. But so much of the issues related to climate change is how we produce and use energy. So where would that responsibility lie? And the committee knows very well that, you know, we had 95% of legislators of both parties vote in 2007 that we were going to reduce our global warming emissions by some 80%, which means that we redo the way we do energy. And we think of smarter, better, innovative ways to produce and consume energy. And it just seems quite logical with that lift and that big responsibility we're putting on state government that we house those two functions under the same roof. So with that, I again thank Senator Anderson for bringing this reform idea forward for a discussion by the committee, and it has my endorsement.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Senator Alcine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Anderson, have you gotten any feedback from some of the other people from these other different departments to see what they think of the changes and all that?
Madam Chair, Senator Alcine, I think this was just introduced a couple of days ago, so there, we haven't had a lot of time to talk about it, although I just want to say again that I've introduced bills to create the separate energy department for 2 years in a row, the last 2 years. So I've been talking about this a lot. But in terms of this proposal, very little opportunity to talk about it. I know I had a brief hallway conversation with Mr. Glenn from the Office of Energy Security about it. And I don't know if he'd like to speak today. That's to give us any reaction. I haven't had, Madam Chair, I really have not talked to the other agencies, to the Commissioner of Commerce, Commissioner of Dolly, or the Commissioner of the PCA about this yet, but I intend to do that.
So, Senator Anderson, I hadn't had a chance to review this either until this afternoon, and I haven't entirely read your bill, but I did ask my staff to put together the agency organizational chart so we could see what we were looking at, and I'll ask them to pass that out. And Assistant Commissioner or Deputy Commissioner Glahn has requested to speak. Go ahead.
Thanks, Heather.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, Senators, I am Bill Glahn, Director of the Office of Energy Security and a Deputy Commissioner in the Department of Commerce.
Welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to give a little bit of background. Again, I will fall on the I just got here excuse, but having started here in September, I have some experience in working with the agency, and which I'd like to share with the members of the committee today, as well as from talking to folks, some familiarity of past efforts along these lines. I think I understand Senator Anderson's point about elevating the profile of the agency, and I'll also respond to Mr. Noble, a couple of points Mr. Noble made as well. But I wanted to start out with the without reciting the whole history, I think there was a Department of Energy at one time. There was a Department of Public Service, which housed many of these functions. And the group that we have today under the Office of Energy Security includes the State Energy Office, which has had a couple of different homes over time, the Office of Energy Assistance, which has been housed, and I had that director put together the list, and it was six or eight different agencies the thing's been housed in over the years. We have what functions as staff, analytical staff for the Public Utilities Commission, which I think that split occurred some 30, 35 years ago when they split off. Commissioner Har, or Director Har was here earlier. And part of the staff who works with the Public Utilities Commission on siting and routing more recently was with the Environmental Quality Board. So it's a group that has been assembled over a number of years under one umbrella, under energy security. And from my understanding of the history of it and my experience in working with the group, it's been no accident that these groups have been brought together under one roof, because they have all these different pieces and they do fit together as a puzzle, and we do work well, as you can see from the org chart here, the different agencies, the different parts of the Office, Energy Assistant, Energy Planning and Advocacy, the regulatory stuff under Ms. White, the State Energy Office under Janet Streff, and some of the miscellaneous parts of it. But I want to give people the idea that this isn't some just complete accident that this all ended up in under the Office of Energy Security and all ended up in the Department of Commerce. And that's some historical accident that needs to be corrected, that as far as the administration is concerned, that we have a structure for for forming energy policy and delivering the programs that we have under our umbrella, and we think it works really well. As for the profile, well, that was the idea behind the creation of the Office of Energy Security. It was formerly the Energy Division of the Department of Commerce. And we created a separate office, and in the executive order creating the office, the idea was put forward that the office would be in charge of coordinating energy policy across the state government. And that's where the buck would stop as far as energy policy is concerned. And so, with no offense to to the cabinet level agencies, I would say the Department of, or the Office of Energy Security has a higher profile than many standalone cabinet agencies. And with a full-time complement of approximately 65, we would end up, had we gone the route that Senator Anderson discussed in previous years, we'd be one of the smaller cabinet agencies. But I think we have a pretty high profile, and I asked your staff to pass out the little magnets with our website on it, and I just want to give a little pitch here for our website, where we relaunched our website. We've had a website for a number of years, but we relaunched it with a new design, which I think is much more user-friendly, much better coordinating with one touch all the different areas we cover. And I encourage everybody to log on to there and to check out our new website, because there's a lot of new information and better organized information about what our office does. There's a link to Stay Warm Minnesota. There's a link to information on the federal stimulus. There's information on energy efficiency and renewable energy and all the other areas we cover in a much more user-friendly way. And we have our Dr. Phil feature, where if you have a question on energy, he'll be more than happy to respond to you by email. And just a little bit about what I've been up to personally since I took over this position from Mr. Garvey a few months ago. I've been working under my own effort to raise the profile of the agency, and a big part of that is my tour around Greater Minnesota, where I've been touring the state, speaking to various groups. I spoke to the Mankato Chamber of Commerce's Envision 2020 group last month, and even though we had one of those pretty bad snowstorms we've had so far this year on that day, it was a pretty good turnout. And I just was down in Albert Lee. I see Senator Sparks isn't here at the moment, but I was just down in Albert Lee in Senator Sparks' district earlier this week in a very successful meeting where the Albert Lee Chamber of Commerce's Agriculture Committee was having their annual ag luncheon and presenting an award to the Farm Family of the Year. And I was privileged to be the keynote speaker at that event, and it got covered in both radio stations, the TV station, the newspaper. We had more than 200 people turn out. I'm going to Little Falls and Baxter next week to speak to folks up there, and I just this morning signed up for an event at the University of Minnesota Morris where I'm speaking at a small town symposium that's being held on the campus there. So we have taken a number of efforts to raise the profile of the Office of Energy Security. My personal efforts in traveling around the state, speaking to statewide groups here in St. Paul when they assemble, the website, the executive order, and just to give you an idea of how we're working within the Department of Commerce, I would take issue with Mr. Noble's characterization of us within the department. I think we have a very high profile within the department. I hold a deputy commissioner post within the department, along with the deputy commissioner of banking and the deputy commissioner of insurance. Commissioner Wilson himself, very knowledgeable of energy issues, and he himself travels around the state speaking on energy issues to groups. Besides the 65 people in our office, the folks we share and shared services with the other parts of the Commerce Department, our general counsel, our CFO, our government relations director, our communications director, all very knowledgeable of energy issues. It's true that it isn't obvious there's a lot of overlap between banking, insurance, and energy, but you'd be surprised. Last month, I had an event where we did a joint press conference with me and the Deputy Commissioner of Insurance and Commissioner Wilson on a new product called Green Insurance, which was being launched. And the idea behind green insurance, as a homeowner, you can buy homeowner's insurance that if you were to have a loss, if you were to have a fire, it would allow you not just to rebuild, but rebuild green and put into the replacement those same green and clean technologies that you had in the original, even if that's at a premium price for what a standard rebuilding job would give you. So that was a product that was fairly innovative, new to Minnesota, that we launched in a rare joint press conference between the insurance and energy divisions. But and just little stuff about working. What I work with Assistant Commissioner Pearson on a number of E85 issues. You might be familiar with Commissioner Pearson, who also runs what is left of the other parts of the Department of Public Service, the Petra Fund and the Weights and Measures Department, and which is all still housed within the Department of Commerce. But back to the Office of Energy Security, part of our mission is to coordinate energy policy across the state government. And to accomplish that, we have biweekly meetings. Every other week, we convene meetings of the deputy commissioner, assistant commissioner level folks from the other agencies, including PCA, who have responsibility for energy, ag and housing and transportation, Met Council, and I'm leaving somebody out. So, in fact, tomorrow we're going to be down at District Energy St. Paul having our regular every other week meeting and also touring their facility down there, which I encourage everybody to do if they haven't done so. It's a fascinating place. We have our CECON group, which I've spoke to you before, our Clean Energy Commercial Opportunity Networks, which is coordinated out of my office and coordinates opportunities. All those folks have gone now, but the ICEL folks and the Energy Harvest folks who spoke earlier on an earlier bill, we bring those and people like them in to meet with deputy commissioner, assistant commissioner level people in the other agencies to spread the word about innovative energy products and new companies that are commercializing exciting new technology. But as for PCA itself, I believe we work really well with the Pollution Control Agency because they are both members of the CECON group and our every other week interagency group. We have, he is listed on, and I apologize, we have an old org chart. We have a couple of new people we have on here that don't appear on the one that was in the handout. But appearing on the handout is Bill Sirks, who is a management level employee, permanent employee of the Pollution Control Agency, who is in residence in our building as a liaison between the PCA and the Department of Commerce. He's been very effective in that role, coordinating the efforts of our two agencies. And I've met on a number of occasions with both Commissioner Egger and with Deputy Commissioner Schirkenbach, who I believe is still over in the back of the room here. And I have almost daily contact with Assistant Commissioner Thornton, who you recall we jointly presented that MCAG report to a couple months ago. So we work closely with the Pollution Control Administration, and Senator Anderson and you, Madam Chair, will both recall that at the MGA group, the cap and trade group, both Commissioner Thornton and I are both involved in that effort and involved in it jointly. So our concerns regarding the bill are numerous, and I won't speak to the Dolly parts and the parts being transferred to the AG and the other stuff that don't directly affect the energy part of it. But as far as the OES, my biggest concern is that the theory behind the bill is by renaming the PCA and by including OES as part of PCA, we'll be elevating energy to a cabinet level of notoriety. I don't know if that's the word.
Importance.
But as a practical matter, I'm glad you handed out, if I may, Senator. I'm glad we handed out the org chart. You can see the Department of Commerce overall. We have the three different divisions. I'm the deputy commissioner of one of the divisions. And then you have my division, our 65 or so folks who are full-time or in the Office of Energy Security. It doesn't include our shared services. But you look at the PCA. It's a large agency. I think they do very good work. It's a large agency. You take a group of 65 and you put them inside a group of 900 or more, and my fear is we'll vanish without a trace. We'll will sink below the waves, never to be heard from again. So I have that general concern about, I appreciate energy getting top billing. I don't know how the deputy commissioner feels about that, but I appreciate energy getting top billing. But my concern is, if you folded us into this much larger agency, you know, how deep into the org chart would we be? How fine the print would be when you got down to our level of it? And, you know, we already have a deputy commissioner ably running the department over there. So, and I appreciate Senator Anderson giving me a year reprieve on my position. That was nice. Or was it 11 months? I think it was 11 months.
About, 13 months.
13 months. Oh, thank you.
No, sorry, I'm wrong.
That was 11? No, I think it was 11.
It was 11.
An 11-month reprieve in my position. But my concern is that in an effort, and I think an understandable effort, that we feel we've been engaged in for a number of years, and especially since we created the office, of elevating energy in Minnesota, elevating the issues in Minnesota, and I'm not sure how this is going to accomplish that, because I'm afraid you merge the two and you have the agency with 900 taking over the one with 65, and what's in the end of the day, what's going to be the emphasis? What's going to get the attention from the senior management? Just to Mr. Noble's point, I think it's entirely appropriate to have separate agencies engaged in these two activities, although they're closely related, and everybody in this committee especially is aware of the environmental impact that the energy sector has. But I think we take a somewhat different views of our roles, and the PCA rightly takes the role. They are controlling pollution. They're about reducing pollution. Whereas our emphasis is more, as I say over and over, ensuring a reliable, adequate, affordable supply of energy that's environmentally sound. But much of what our office engages is growing the renewable energy industry, growing the energy efficiency sector, making enough energy available that we can do expansions in our industrial sector for stuff like the Esser plant up in northern Minnesota. So we have a little different approach to how we're handling energy and energy regulation versus more of the control, more of the reduction viewpoint, which is entirely appropriate for the PCA. As for climate change, I would just point out that that's a 216 chapter, and so that falls under the Office of Energy Security in terms of delegated powers. So to answer your question, I think the buck stops with me. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Are there questions or comments? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, I guess this would be to Senator Anderson. Would this require a fiscal note, your bill? Because I would assume there is a cost to the changes that you're proposing.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen. I don't know if there's a fiscal cost to this, but there should be also some kind of savings to this. This isn't about, you know, I don't know that this would generate big energy or big money budget savings, but it certainly would bring some. And so I don't know what the overall impact is, and I assume the agencies will be bringing that forward. This bill would have to go to Senator Metzen's committee, Senator Chaudhry's committee, the policy committees that are involved in overseeing the agencies, and then it would have to go to my budget division and Senator Tomasoni's budget division. So we have
Commerce.
Commerce and the Commerce Committee, perhaps. Yes, of course. There's a lot of committees this would have to go to. And by the time we got to the budget divisions, I'm sure we'd have a fiscal note from the agency. So I don't know the answer to that yet.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know you just got this introduced last week, Senator Anderson, so I understand there's no fiscal note, but I would assume there would have to be, because when you start looking at the letterhead and consolidation of the offices, the moving, it is going to be quite cumbersome, to get the coordination going, and there will be a cost.
Madam Chair,
state and local government. I mean, Senator Anderson.
Yeah, I
Anderson.
Do that sometimes. Oh, and state, yeah, a lot of committees.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, this is also eliminating an entire state agency. And so there will be savings, too. And so I think that at a maximum it would be cost neutral. That's my guess, and that was my intention, that it wouldn't be a net cost to the state. But I don't know for sure. We need to get some more analysis of the details.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Senator Anderson, when you say elimination of an entire agency, is there going to be some consolidation of those people into the other agencies, I would assume? Basically, you know, just folding them in and making just another agency larger. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, but you also have an opportunity to eliminate a lot of duplication. You don't need two HR departments. You don't need two, you know, computer departments. If you merge two agencies together, you can save on some overhead, perhaps, but certainly on some duplicative kind of administrative costs. It's not going to be a big money saver, but I think it could save some.
And Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, the one question I have, again, is the Group 1 salary limits. What was the reasoning behind not to exceed 95% of the salary of the governor? Are there some commissioners that are receiving a higher salary than the governor?
Madam Chair,
Senator Anderson.
I don't know. Council who drafted this put that in there, and I thought it was sort of standard language. Maybe it is standard language for all the commissioners, unless otherwise noted. I honestly don't know why it's in there, and I apologize. I don't have an answer. I don't know. The council who drafted this is not here. So I use the council who works for my division, and so I don't know the answer to that. I think it's standard. Madam Chair, could I take a moment?
Senator Anderson, I understand that would be the highest salary
permitted by law. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, could I just take a moment to respond to Mr. Glahn?
Senator Anderson.
And I want to start by saying this is not personal. This is not about Mr. Glahn. We like Mr. Glahn, and he's a very nice person. And it makes it hard to make these kinds of big picture changes because you don't want to affect – you don't want to hurt any individual person but what I really want to make clear that this is not about in any way criticizing the work that the Office of Energy Security is doing. And I think those of you who know me know that, you know, I'm a little bit obsessive about energy issues, and I've been working on them for a long time. And so the last thing that I would want to do is try to minimize the work that the Office of Energy Security is doing. To the contrary, that's exactly the opposite of what I'm proposing here. And I understand what Mr. Glahn is saying about, Deputy Commissioner Glahn is saying about making sure if we did decide to go forward with this merger, and obviously it will take a lot of discussion in a lot of committees, it would be critically important to set up the structure in a new agency so that this office was a high-level part of the department, the new department, because that's the point of this, is to make it a priority area and a high-level piece of a new agency, not to hide it somewhere and, you know, reduce its importance. And I would hope that the magnets and all the Office of Energy Security name would stay. It could be that could be a name under a Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. But let me just give a specific example of why I think, as a policy matter, this makes sense. And I pulled out the law that sets our greenhouse gas reduction goals that you authored, Madam Chair. And that's, as you mentioned, that's in the 216, Chapter 216. And so our law that requires our state to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by a certain percent over the next few decades, which I would argue is probably the most significant umbrella energy policy that our state has on the books. That law is within the purview of the Office of Energy Security. Now, Madam Chair, think about another bill that I think you have to create a climate registry, which is a system that will measure those emissions, as I understand it, or start to count them and measure them. That will be housed in the Pollution Control Agency. And so, to me, it's a perfect example why these need to be together, because the agency that's in charge of the goals is not the agency that's in charge of measuring the progress towards those goals. And so it seems to me that now is the time to put those together in one place so that Deputy Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner David Thornton and Bill Glenn are working side by side on achieving these goals. It's going to make us far more effective at achieving those goals, I think, if we put those into one place and emphasize that we're going to make that happen by making it a cabinet level of importance.
Senator Anderson, I have to say that I've heard you discuss creating an energy office, and I like the idea. I thought that that would be important. But as I said, this is the first time I've looked at it, and so I asked that these charts be pulled out so we could take a look at it. And I have to say that I'm not so very excited about moving energy into the Pollution Control Agency because it feels like it would just get lost in here. And especially since this committee deals with energy, utilities, technology, and communications, it's really in the Division of Commerce or the Department of Commerce, Agency. So it makes it, I don't find myself very enamored of splitting that up at this point. And I feel like we have higher profile in the Commerce Division. If it were a separate, the Commerce Agency, if it were a separate agency all by itself, I could get very excited about it. But I'm not sure that we really gain anything by moving it over to the Pollution Control Agency.
Madam Chair, I appreciate your comments, and I'm really open to that conversation. I wonder, I mean, the last point about having, you know, the agency that's measuring those emissions and the agency that's in charge of reaching those goals for reducing the emissions, to me, that's kind of that's an important point, and I wonder if how you feel about that. Do you think it makes sense to put those together? I mean,
I'm not sure, Senator Anderson. They could be checks and balances against one another, too. Otherwise, they're just kind of co-opted.
Well, Madam Chair, you could, I mean, if you thought they belonged together, you could take them all and put them in a standalone agency. I'm just wondering if you think that would make more sense.
I would like to see that. I'm not sure that we have the financial wherewithal to do that at this time.
Well, as I mentioned, Madam Chair, this bill would reduce one state agency. So we could change this bill and have the standalone cabinet agency that I've been talking about and you and I have been talking about for a long time and still have no net increase in agencies. So that I'm open to that discussion as well because that's kind of where I started. And I think, you know, I don't know which is the best way to go, but I think that it's important to elevate this issue.
Mm-hmm. Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson and Senators, I was just trying to make a joke about the 11-month thing, so I don't want people to think this is about me. So, you know, and the Office of Energy Security was in good hands before I showed up. It'll be in good hands after I leave, and that certainly shouldn't enter into the equation. And I certainly would offer to meet with Senator Anderson, Madam Chair, yourself, or any other senator who has a concern about the importance of the agency, the profile of the agency, to think of ways we could make changes that would help that, to help elevate it. And we're certainly open to that. You know, we think we have a good structure the way we're doing it now. We don't believe we have a monopoly on the truth or a monopoly on all the best ideas. We'd be happy to talk with people about what we could do differently to do what Mr. Noble and Senator Anderson have suggested, that these are important issues. I certainly think they're important issues. I wouldn't be here. To elevate them and to get more attention and to give them the importance and weight they deserve.
You know, I think that energy probably will have the highest profile in the next few years. And so it does make sense that it should have a high profile within our state system also. Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, first I want to compliment Senator Anderson. You know, we just need reform ideas, and here's one of them. But to that, then, I would say, I'm kind of just visualizing if we got a meeting in Rochester with, say, it's a noon luncheon at the Chamber of Commerce, big crowd, and you got two choices, the Director of Energy Security or the Assistant Commissioner of Energy Security. In terms of just bizazz, it seems to me like that Director of Energy Security, whether it's before a group like that or even this committee, walks in with a little higher stature than an assistant commissioner. That's just me, but it just seems that way. Then just the other thing I would say, I spent most of my lifetime working for a large organization in environmental regulatory affairs, and I cannot begin to imagine revamping the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency all the way through their system, all their forms, all their computer systems. I mean, I suppose I could get there, but I can't imagine. That would be a huge, gigantic task, in my view. And I'm not sure it's the kind of thing that you want to spend money on, given our financial situation. So I'll just stop there.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Senator Senjum, I completely agree with you about the Director of the Office of Energy Security, and there's no reason why you couldn't maintain that title and that same pizzazz within, because right now it's subsumed under Commerce. It could be subsumed under any other agency and still be the Director of the Office of Energy Security. But I'm wondering if I'm hearing more support for the idea of making this a standalone agency. I mean, Madam Chair, I'm open to the idea of amending this bill to do that instead, if that's what the committee is more favorable towards. Oh,
I think he felt he should
anymore.
Step away on that one.
I think, you know, maybe Mr. Glahn would like that better. Yeah. But honestly, this is the policy committee, and this is where we need to have that discussion. And if that makes more sense, it's a little bit of a harder sell because it doesn't have that same cost savings. But if it's the right thing to do, then I think we should talk about it. And, you know, this is the first discussion. This is going to be a long discussion, and it's going to take a while if we're going to really make a big change. So I want to do it right, and I'm not too worried about taking our time to do it right.
So, Senator Anderson, it's not going to get through five or six committees by next Thursday to meet first deadline. Would it be okay if we laid this over for a little while and talked about it?
I guess, Madam Chair, if that's your wish, that's fine. I mean, I know the leadership is really trying to fast-track these reform bills. I don't know if they can perform that kind of miracle or not. I think, though, that probably they intend to bring the reform bills to the Rules Committee because probably several of them might miss deadlines. And so they may I think that doesn't necessarily doom this session, the fact that it's got a long ways to go in a short time. I think it's still possible that we could move forward. Would you have time to bring it back in a few days so we could consider some amended versions?
I think we can take it back Tuesday night. We just have to ask the Commerce and ECA contact us with their concerns before we take it up.
Okay. Senator Anderson, I think we could make room for it on our agenda Tuesday evening.
Tuesday evening, okay. Yeah. That would be great. I think that's appropriate, and maybe I could have a chance to talk to some individual committee members about what they think and get. I mean, if anyone has any more feedback, I'd like to hear it.
I would also like to ask the departments to come forward with any advice or concerns that they might have, too.
That would be great, Madam Chair.
Okay.
If there's any, does anyone else have any other comments?
Well, I might as well.
Senator Sharon.
It is... I think a complex decision that has many tentacles to it that I might not be able to really grasp within the time frame that we're talking about to discuss it in this committee, even with another hearing. And although we want to fast-track reform so we can capture some savings in this time, I am uncomfortable about a real structural change like this without us taking, at least I would be uncomfortable voting for something that I was not clear about the outfall from it. Without some lengthier analysis of it for me to be comfortable.
Senator,
that's just all I'm saying.
Senator Anderson, because energy policy is the basis of it, along with perhaps the if there's any financial savings from it. So there's, you know, perhaps a fiscal impact. But I'm wondering if we could send it on through the committees to be worked on, and then if it could come back to energy policy before it goes to finance.
Madam Chair, I'd be fine with that, too. And just so we could get some, you know, get some feedback from the other committees and see what their reaction is. Either way, I'm open to. And I agree, it's a, you know, it's a big issue and it needs real discussion. So I don't have a I'm trying to get a hearing in Senator Chaudhry's committee on Monday because I believe he's hearing another bill that's a different approach to reorganization. So if we could get onto his schedule, that would be really a good time to have that conversation. I suppose we could do it even if we didn't have the bill, but it would be, it wouldn't process it.
Madam Chair.
He meets in the afternoon?
Yeah, Monday afternoon.
We could process the bill Monday morning.
Yeah, yeah, and send it to his committee, perhaps.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really do question the savings and the costs on this. I hope you are going to get a fiscal note on this because I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around this also, how this is going to work in such a short time frame. And I'll be honest, Senator Anderson, we have a lot of other things that we are trying to juggle here. I wish this was brought up in a year where we have time for the thoughtful discussion and it didn't have to be hurried, because the worst thing we could do is to make a major change and it ends up costing money and it's inefficient and it doesn't focus on in this committee that we would like it to focus on, and we do more harm than good. So I too appreciate your work on this, and I know that you are a creative thinker. We appreciate that of that, but I just cannot feel comfortable with this there are so many working pieces to this that I feel there is going to be a cost to it, and I'm not sure if it's ever going to really be that effective at this time.
My suggestion is that we pass it on without recommendation so that it can come back to us for a stamp of approval.
Madam Chair, I think that's a good suggestion, and I would be happy to do that come back in front of you and see where we're at and try to get that fiscal note.
Okay, so Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 1642
as amended
be recommended, be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources without recommendation at this time. Senator Sanders.
Madam Chair, may I ask procedurally then, is it somehow implied within this system that none of us understand that it would come back here at some point before it went to the floor?
We will ask for it, and I think Senator Anderson will help shepherd it this way.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll give my commitment to that, and, you know, we're agreeing to that today. So that's part of the deal.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. And members, on Tuesday will be a long session. I'm wanting to know whether you would rather just keep going until we finish on Tuesday, or if you want to break for a meal, or if you want to bring your meals and take some time to step back and eat. Would you rather finish early or take the time to eat and finish later?
Yeah, early. Keep going.
So we'll just keep going on Tuesday then. Okay. And please come early so that we can start on time. Meeting adjourned.